The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us. You are listening to the number one progressive radio program in the world. From all over, people are asking questions. What do we do about these problems? We're here to answer those problems, whether it's about the environment, your body, alternative health care. We'll be here, and we will not be influenced by either the left or the right. Today, a commentary, time permitting, and I don't have a guest today, so I have time. Tom Engelhart, TomDispatch.com, Whose Hands, Whose Blood? You've been hearing Petraeus all over the media talking about how we have to stay the course in Afghanistan. We have to show some moral high ground. We have to show that we've won something. No, we don't. And there'll be a commentary to challenge him on that. I'll be taking calls starting in about 15 minutes on any topic that you feel is important to you. Feel free to call in at that time to ask questions, to offer input. That number is 888-874-4888. A special welcome to all of our people listening from Baltimore, Bethesda, Virginia, Washington, D.C., and the entire metro area down there on WPFW. 25 years every week. According to Mike Adams of the Natural News, choosing health food is now, believe it or not, called a mental disorder. You got to listen to this. It's hard to believe, but it's actually true. How do I know? Because I'm filming one of my new documentaries I'm filming now is on pathologizing our children. The intent by the pharmaceutical industry to make conditions that get accepted into the medical nomenclature so that your child's normal behavior can be diagnosed as a mental illness and your child given prescription medication. And it's a never-ending attempt to fabricate mental disorders out of every human activity. The psychiatric industry is now pushing the most ridiculous disease they've invented yet. Healthy eating disorder. I'm guilty. Well, they don't have a sick eating disorder. A fast food eating disorder, a lick the toilet bowl eating disorder, and that's out of Tennessee. Why don't they have any of this stuff? They should. Vote for a jerk president. Well, let's see, we could go clear back all those disorders. No, this is no joke. If you focus on eating healthy foods, you're mentally diseased and probably need some sort of chemical treatment involving powerful psychotropic drugs. Quote, fixation with healthy eating can be a sign of serious psychological disorders. And this disease is called orthorexia nervosa, which comes from Latin, which means nervous about correct eating. But they can't just call it nervous healthy eating disorder because that doesn't sound like they know what they're talking about. So they translate it into Latin where it sounds smart, even though it isn't. That's where most disease names come from. Doctors just describe the symptoms they see with a name like osteoporosis, which means bones with holes in them. Why don't they just say you've got bones with holes in them? No, they have to act like they know something. Osteoporosis. Well, getting back to this completely fabricated orthorexia disease, the newspaper The Guardian that I have a lot of respect for says, quote, orthorexics commonly have rigid rules around eating, refusing to eat too much sugar, salt, caffeine, alcohol, wheat, gluten, yeast, soya, corn, and dairy foods. It's just the start of their diet restrictions. Any foods that come into contact with pesticides, herbicides, or contain artificial additives is also out. Unquote. Well, there I am. Oh, brother, they can just stamp me with that disease. Well, wait a second. So let me get this right. So attempting to avoid chemicals and dairy and soy and sugar now makes you a mental health patient. Yes, according to these experts, if you actually take special care to avoid pesticides, herbicides, and genetically modified ingredients like soy and sugar, then they're saying there's something wrong with you. But you notice that eating junk food is assumed to be normal. So if you eat processed junk food, you can eat all the fat you want. You can actually go into a fast food restaurant and stick your face in a 5-pound bowl of bacon. That's okay. You could eat every French fry that they make on a whole city block. That's okay. You could suck the juice off a curb. No problem there. And probably lick a fire hydrant. Okay there. But choose to eat healthy? Oh, no, no. Organic? Uh-oh. Watch out. They're going to come to get you. So what is normal when it comes to foods? I've told you this is coming. How many times have I warned you, the listeners of this radio show, that there's an attempt being made to outlaw broccoli because it's anti-carcinogenic phytonutrients? This mental health assault on health-conscious consumers is part of that agenda. It's an effort to marginalize healthy eaters by declaring them to be mentally unstable and therefore justify carting them off to mental institutions where they will be injected with psychiatric drugs and fed institutional food that's all processed, dead, and full of toxic chemicals. The Guardian even goes to the ridiculous extreme of saying, quote, the obsession about which foods are good and which are bad means that you end up malnourished. Really? Where are you getting your facts? Let's see. Every single study shows that the average American, and for that matter the average British person, is malnourished in multiple nutrients. But the average person seeking their foods intelligently is actually properly nourished. So you've got that completely backwards. Follow the non-logic on this. If you can eat good foods, will cause malnutrition. Eating bad foods will give you all the nutrients you need. That's about as crazy a statement on nutrition as I've ever read. No wonder people are so diseased today. The mainstream media is telling that eating healthy food is a mental disorder that will cause malnutrition. It's just like I reported years ago. You're not supposed to question your food, folks. Sit down, shut up, dig in, and chow down. Stop thinking about what you're eating and just do what you're told by the mainstream media and its processed food advertisers. Questioning the health properties of your junk food is a mental disorder. Didn't you know that? And if you obsess over foods by doing such things as reading the ingredient labels, for example, or not wanting to eat something high in sodium, or not wanting monosodium glutamate, then you're weird, maybe even emotionally sick. Well, that's the message they're broadcasting now. Junk food eaters are normal and sane and nourished. But health food eaters, well, were diseased, abnormal, and malnourished. But why, you ask, would they attack healthy eaters? People like, well, for example, Dr. Gabriel Cousins. Well, because increased mental and spiritual awareness is only possible while on a diet of living natural foods. How in the world can anyone be spiritually aware and be eating dead corpses? Ghouls eat dead corpses. Vampires suck blood. So having a tartar, which is really raw, it's like kibbe, it's a Syrian food, it's raw meat with some onions in it, or parsley, you're getting all that blood. Having a very rare piece of steak, you're drinking blood. Well, if you're drinking an animal's blood, why don't we just have stores where you go in and you select the animal of your choice, maybe dogs and cats and kittens or rabbits or wolves or gorillas, and then they have a tube, and then you go over and you pay some money and you pour out a glass of their blood and drink it. Well, because that's what you're doing when you're eating rare foods. You're drinking, literally, down your gullet, you're taking in cow's blood. And then you're ripping the flesh off that piece of meat. Why not just have stores where you can go in? They'd be very popular. They'd be different. For example, on Fifth Avenue, they would have stores where you'd have those little lobster bibs, so you wouldn't get your designer clothes dirty. And you go in, just stick your head through a cage and rip the side out of an animal. Yeah, that would be, you know, and if you're Donald Trump, you can give him a look at your hairdo. That'll cause him to be anesthetized, and he'll just drop over dead. God, why doesn't someone eat Donald Trump? That I would pay for. Yeah, put him on one of those island shows. Donald barbecued. In any case, what would people do without him, though? So what we have is we have this very bizarre notion that we don't look at the context in which we eat things. We like to think as long as we're eating it, you know, delicately on some beautiful china with candles, that somehow it takes away from the full, oppressive, barbaric, cannibalistic, and ghoulish way that it actually enters our body. But be conscious of that, and suddenly you're a nut job. All right? In contrast to that, people who are eating health-enhancing natural foods, taking your wheatgrass juice, getting all your fiber, being conscious, meditating, doing things with intent to enhance life energy, well, then there's something wrong with you. Over time, they begin to question the reality around them, and they pursue more enlightened explorations of topics like community and nature and ethics and philosophy and the big picture of things that are happening in the world. They become aware and start to see the very fabric of the matrix, so to speak. This, of course, is a huge danger to those who run our consumption-based society, because consumption depends on you being an idiot. So if you're an idiot, I mean really an idiot, then you become very susceptible to their message. For people to keep blindly buying foods and medicines and health insurance and consumer goods, they need to have their higher brain function switched off. Processed junk food laced with toxic chemicals just happens to achieve that rather nicely. Why do you think dead processed food remains the default meals in public schools, hospitals, and prisons? It's because dead foods turn off higher levels of awareness and keep people focused on whatever distractions you can feed their brains: television, violence, fear, sports, sex, and so on. But living as a zombie is, in one way, quite normal in society today because so many people are doing it, but that doesn't make it normal in my book. The real normal is an empowered, healthy, awakened person nourished with living foods and operating as a sovereign citizen in a free world. Ron Paul, you got that right. And by the way, yesterday I was watching television, Judge Napolitano. I thought he did a brilliant job of excoriating both the left and the right for not paying attention to the idea that these drones and the security agencies that we have in abundance and all these people who are looking in on our private lives, there's something basically wrong with that. It is only the libertarians and the constitutionalists only who've stood up and said, this is a violation of our rights and our sanctity. Turn the channel and you see other people who could care less about their rights or sanctity. And so eating living food is like taking the red pill, because over time it opens up reality. It sets you free to think for yourself. But eating processed junk food is like taking the blue pill, because it keeps you trapped in a fabricated reality where your life experiences are fabricated by consumer product companies who hijack your senses with designer chemicals like MSG that fool your brain into thinking you're eating real food and you're not. You doubt me? How about this study when a group of school children were given real fresh strawberries, didn't like them, were given strawberry drink that had no strawberries, lots of sugar, artificial flavors, artificial color, love that. If you want to be alive and aware and in control of your own life, eat more healthy living foods, but don't expect to be popular with mainstream mental health experts or dietitians. They're idiots. By the way, I am one. There are about three of us in America who are dietitians, registered dietitians, actually have a brain. They're all being programmed to consider you to be crazy because you don't follow the mainstream diets of dead foods laced with synthetic chemicals. Who's their major champion of dead foods in America? Hillary Clinton. Oh, yeah. She's never seen a Fortune 500 company she and her husband couldn't milk for some favors. She was one of the sponsors of the mental health bill that would allow all of us to be screened for mental illnesses. If you're defiant, mental illness. Stand up to authority, mental illness. Think for yourself, mental illness. Yep. You see where that's leading. But you and I know the truth here. we are the normal ones. The junk food eaters are the real mental patients, and the only way to wake them up to the real world is to start feeding them living foods and honest thoughts. In conclusion, in the meantime, try to avoid the mental health agents who are trying to label you as a mental disorder because you pay attention to what you put into your body. The next thing you know, they're going to call you mental because you're concerned about your life, your future, your security, concepts of morality, ethics, decency, and honor. Oh yeah, they'll get around to making those all abnormal. Gee whiz, you think about honesty in politics, you must have a political honesty defiance disorder. Where will it end? I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment. Please stay with us. People actually had voices. Now they just have attitudes. And that was Jackie Wilson, along with Brooke Benton. Oh, great singers. A commentary from Tom Englehart. Consider the following statement offered by Admiral Mike Mullen, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, at a news conference last week. I'm only going to give half this because it's a long commentary. And then I'll be opening it up for your calls at 888-874-4888. But we pride ourselves in being the one radio program in all of America that gives important commentaries 15 hours a week. Every single hour of the program, we're going to do something that probes our thought and allows us to think differently. Anyhow, we've seen how this Julian Assange, the founder of WikiLeaks, they're trying to set him up now. That's clear. But also, I've heard people say, "Oh, he should be assassinated. He should be killed because he's undermining America's safety." No, he's not. And the American media got all this wrong, absolutely wrong. The emphasis was not on the legality or the ethics of him leaking the papers. The emphasis should have been on what do the papers tell us about the lies of the administration, the Obama administration, the Clinton administration, the Bush administration, because they go back a ways. Shouldn't we pay attention to the truth of the information now uncovered rather than continuing to say, well, let's just continue believing in lies? No. So good for him. In any case, Admiral Mullen was talking about how he has created such a problem for the United States. The British Guardian was one of the three publications given early access to the leaked archives, and it began its main article this way, quote, "A huge cache of secret U.S. military files today provides a devastating portrait of the failing war in Afghanistan, revealing how coalition forces have killed hundreds of civilians in unreported incidents. The range from the shootings of individual innocents to the often massive loss of life from airstrikes," unquote. Okay, did we see that in the New York Times? Absolutely not. And then they went on to talk about in The Guardian about the secret CIA paramilitary's role in civilians' deaths. Quote, "Behind the military jargon, the war logs are littered with accounts of civilian tragedies. The 144 entries in the logs recorded some of those so-called blue and white events cover a wide spectrum of day-to-day assaults on Afghans with hundreds of casualties." Now, here he was, for example, chairman of the Joint Chief of Staff's, but he was Joint Chief of Staff chairman in July 2008 when an American plane or planes took out an Afghan bridal party. 90 civilians killed, mostly women, on a road near the Pakistani border. They were, quote, escorting the bride to meet her groom as local tradition dictates. The bride, whose name we don't know, died, as did at least 27 other members of her party, including children. Mullen was similarly chairman in August 2008 when a memorial service for a tribal leader in the village of Azabagdad in Afghanistan's Herat province was hit by repeated U.S. airstrikes that killed at least 90 innocent civilians, including 15 women and 60 children killed in one airstrike. Among the dead were 76 members of one extended family. Now, Joint Chief of Staff Mullen was still chairman in April 2009 when members of the family of Awa Khan, an Afghan Army artillery commander on duty elsewhere, was killed in a U.S.-led raid in Khost province in eastern Afghanistan. Among them were his schoolteacher wife, a 17-year-old daughter named Nadia, a 15-year-old son, Aimal, and his brother, employed by government department. Another daughter was wounded, and the pregnant wife of Khan's cousin was shot 5 times in her stomach at close range. Mullen remained chairman and joint chief in November 2009. Two relatives of the minister of agriculture in Afghanistan were shot down in cold blood in Ghazni City in a special operation night raid. As he was, and here we move beyond the WikiLeaks time frame, when in February 2010, U.S. Special Force troops helicopters struck a convoy of minibuses, killing 27 civilians, including mostly women and children. Also, he was, in the same month, overseeing Special Operations Night Raid. Two pregnant women and a teenage girl and police officers were shot to death in their home in a village, the capital of Paktia province, after which the soldiers reportedly dug the bullets out of the bodies, washed the wounds with alcohol, and tried to cover up the incidents. He was no less chairman late last month when residents of a small town in Helmand province in southern Afghanistan claimed that a NATO missile killed 52 civilians in an incident like just about every other one mentioned in a moment ago, and where there was denial, but it was going to be investigated. And this represents only a grim minimalist highlight reel among rafts of such incidents, including enough repeated killings or woundings of innocent civilians that checkpoints at previous Afghan war commander General Stanley McChrystal's commented, quote, "We've shot an amazing number of people and killed a number, and to my knowledge, none has proven to have been a real threat to the force," unquote. In other words, in your basic overview, we're looking at the concept of command responsibility, and no one holds any of these people responsible for the actual blood of thousands of civilians that have been killed here. All right? So the next time you, Admiral Mullen, or any of the other clowns around you decide to get up and start beating your chest in some self-serving manner that WikiLeaks is a disservice to the American public because of what it does to undermine our security, why don't you take responsibility for the 1,000-plus innocent civilian, including all the children, who have died under your command? Oh, or did I forget? This is Washington, and no one ever takes responsibility for any error, ever, do they? That's what I think of this commander. Those are my thoughts. Joining me in studio, Kara Lee. Hi, Kara.
Good afternoon, Gary.
And on our conference phone here, our first caller, we have Hank from Reading, Pennsylvania. So let's go over and say hello to Hank. Hi, Hank.
Good afternoon, Dr. Noll. It's an honor and a pleasure.
Thank you.
I have a question for you. My lady friend, who's 50 years old, is diagnosed and has been diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis since she's been 32. She veggie juices, vegetable juices twice a day, and has been eating a lot of fruits whole, raw, And I'm just curious, as because her inflammation in her knees has been so bad that should there be an avoidance?
What you should do is this. I can't tell you what she should do until I speak with her, because you've told me she's juicing, but I don't know what else she's eating. I don't know what she's eaten before that would have caused the condition. And once a person has a condition, whether it's lung cancer from smoking, liver disease from drinking, or hepatitis from a viral infection, you could have all forms of conditions in the body that have occurred, and then a person makes a change. It depends upon how extensive the change actually is as to whether or not they're going to be able to exceed the limitation that disease is causing their body. What you should do is have the woman call in, be happy to talk with her. Now, I'm going to do a show tomorrow at the same time, and if you ask her to call in, we'll see that she gets on the air and I can address her issues, all right?
Should she be avoiding any of the citric fruits?
Well, again, it depends upon what she's consuming. Hank, you can't talk as a surrogate. I need to speak with her. Okay? So ask her to call me tomorrow. I'll be happy to address her questions. Yeah, it's easy to deal with arthritis. That's one of the. There's no reason that anyone in this audience couldn't overcome the pain in their arthritis and the swelling within 3 weeks. It's very easy. All right, we'll take. Let's call. Say hello to Peter from Chevy Chase, Maryland. Hi, Peter.
Hi, Gary Noll. Thanks for your program. I am calling about what you said about the psychiatry profession.
Yes.
I agree with you completely. Shane Harris wrote a book about the Surveillance Society, and Dana Priest has been doing an investigative reporter for the Washington Post has been writing about the making a huge statement about the Surveillance Society, and Sheldon Woolen, a professor at Princeton University, a professor of political science at Princeton University, talks about inverted totalitarianism.
We've had him on twice in the last 6 months.
Yeah, I heard him. That's where I heard. Thank you for that. That's where I heard him on your program. And also Inga Parsons, a professor of law at New York University, she talks about social control, and she was talking about Professor Gates, I believe at Harvard University, I believe being arrested as he's trying to get into his own house, into his own home. Shea Calvo.
Hold on. What is your point? Go to your point first.
Just one more. Shea Calvo, mayor of Berwyn Heights in Prince George's County, his home was invaded by the police. He's a mayor of Berwyn Heights, Prince George's County, Maryland. This has to do with there is a law prescribing against the taking over of society by the military, and this also has to apply to other authorities as well.
Okay, what we're doing is this. We're going to be doing a series of programs on the loss of our freedom in the United States. I have a group of scholars, professors, who are coming on for two-hour specials. We're devoting 4 hours to this topic. I consider it so important. And unfortunately, the mainstream media, left and right, have not dealt with this in any serious manner, or not dealt with it at all. We will. So we will address what is happening to our rights at the state level, the federal level, constitutional guarantees, but we will do it in a very professional manner, and you can expect to hear this program within the next 4 weeks. Okay? Thank you for your call. Carol Lee in studio, and we'll continue to take calls. We're going to intersperse the calls from Carol Lee with people calling in at 888-874-4888. Now, a couple things. First, we now have up on GaryNoll.com and ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com the dissenting voices within the AIDS establishment. And these voices are some of the leading scientists on the planet, from Africa and Russia and France and Italy and Israel. I took a series of over 125 foreign scientists and across the United States, Nobel Prize winners, professors of virology, and they're all saying the same thing. Every one of them are now officially on the record that everything we've been told about AIDS is a lie. So now you can read them for yourself and read their backgrounds and credentials. And we have, it'll take you at least a week to read all their responses. These are outstanding people with great backgrounds, and they chose to go public at this time. They're up on my website. So we are pushing back against the AIDS scam and the AIDS community for bilking the public out of $400 billion, killing a lot of people with their drugs, and not doing anything about the actual underlying 30 conditions we call AIDS. So now that's up there so people can take a look at it. I just wanted to share that with people. What's on your agenda there?
Well, Gary, first of all, I wanted to congratulate you. You have broken two records so far. One just this week about the new high numbers of people going in and listening to the show and downloading the show, and your numbers by yourself are up 20%. And you've also broken another record with Progressive Radio Network, as we are getting more and more listeners all the time. So I just wanted to say congratulations.
Thank you.
And going into some of these news articles that I brought into the studio with me, one of them is from the New York Times, and it's talking about how Taliban intensifies their attacks against the Afghan police. And it's talking about how the amount of violent attacks and raids are increasing, and over the past week or so, 15 policemen have been killed throughout the country. And I was wondering to know, Gary, what do you think is really the story behind this story?
There's always a story behind the story, and the story can be compared to what's happening in Iraq. Just when we have been led to believe as a public that we have made a sacrifice that has gained some substance here, in other words, all the men and women who've been injured or killed, all the money we've spent, it's worth something because we brought democracy to Iraq and stability to Afghanistan. Neither is true. At any given time, whenever they choose to, the insurgents in Iraq, either Shia or Sunni or Kurd, can destabilize any of the cities by killing whoever they choose to kill. And then the politicians are in gridlock for their own needs, because when they get power, they can control the flow of billions of dollars of money into their private bank accounts, into their cronies and corrupt corporate deals. We've known this all along. The average American would not like to see a counter up on the screen that every dollar that's lost to negligence or corruption and theft in Iraq and Afghanistan would suddenly be up on your screen, you know, like the national debt counters they have around the country. Because you think, well, hold on a second, why do we continue to support these corrupt regimes? Because the reality is, at the end of the day, we will have made no composite input in either country. We will not change the theocracy. You're not going to change over 1,000 years of tribal belief and religious custom. Our form of democracy, participatory democracy, does not exist in that part of the world and won't. We are not going to make the plight of women better. We will not be able to overcome the obstacles of local tribal chiefs and the role that they play in a society. We would like to think we have the template for what the world should be, and we're just going to stamp it on every country and make them adopt to our standards. That's never going to happen. I predict, and I'll go on the record predicting this, that within 1 year of us leaving, fully leaving Afghanistan or Iraq, everything will revert back. You'll see massive civil strife between the Taliban and the Northern Alliance, that's really just the warlords, the people who dominate a whole area. The warlords don't want to work with the Taliban, but they do, because the warlords grow the poppies. The Taliban are able to get the money from the poppies to pay for their efforts. So you have this unhealthy alliance. In the end, it will only be when the Taliban are brought into the government and into society. And remember, when they come in, they're bringing Sharia law with them. They're bringing the Madras school system in with them. Now, there still may be public schools, but they will be completely overwhelmed in that regard. As far as children going to school, they'll go to a religious school. and there will be a substantial theocracy, but it'll be disguised much like Iran. Iran has a supreme Ayatollah. And then you have a overriding council, much like our Supreme Court, but it's a supreme religious court. And its verdict is final, except if the Ayatollah counters it. And then you have your parliament, which are elected, and your president, which is elected. Well, it's phony elections. But these are the people that will deal with the day-to-day business. But all of the major businesses in Iran, all of them, all the major industries, are run by the Guard. And the Guard have positioned themselves since the times of Jimmy Carter and the Ayatollah Khomeini regime, the Revolutionary Guard, as controlling all the business interest. Now, they do not want a war with either Israel or the United States because they would lose all of their wealth, their bank accounts would be frozen, their personal assets would be destroyed or confiscated. So no one in Iran wins with the conflict, but they have to posture and they have to act as if they're tough, and their rhetoric is stupid and vile, but you also have to understand these people are not stupid in the sense of losing what they've gained. They're not martyrs. These are not people going to run out and, you know, say, let us, you know, take the bullet. They're not going to do that. And so what they are looking to do is to have enormous influence in Iraq, and because they are now teaching, well, the person will be the religious leader in Iraq who is a Shiite. You will have the same form of government in Iraq, and you will have the same form of government in Afghanistan, and it will all be headed by religious individuals who have puppets working within the parliaments, and but nothing will get done if it doesn't pass their religious standards, just as it has to in Saudi Arabia. All right, that's the reality of it. And by the way, in Lebanon. Who do you think is the most powerful force in Lebanon? The Christians? No. No, Hezbollah. So all that we have done is cause enormous suffering to ourselves and to others. All of this will revert back. And what they do when they decide to blow up markets or cars or kill police officers is just to remind people, when you think that you have brought your democracy and you think that you have brought control over violence, we're going to remind you, you have no control over anything here. And that's the message they're sending.
Thank you, Gary. And do we have time for one more article?
Sure.
Okay. This one right here is about the flooding in Pakistan and about the breaches that were made in the man-made canals and how they're constructing these canals to go away from the big cities and start flooding all the farmland. So therefore, all these farmers now are going out of work and are left stranded. And what do you think would have been the proper preparation for something like this to have happened in Pakistan?
It can't happen anywhere. It can't. But I'll tell you what should happen in an ideal world. By the way, people can watch today's program. I forgot to mention that. We're streaming live from our studio in New York City by going to GaryNull.com. You can watch this discussion. First and foremost, the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund should establish a fund that is to build food and water treatment and emergency centers in every province of every country in the world that is susceptible to natural disasters. That means Bangladesh, Pakistan, different parts of India, and certainly throughout South America, but also in the United States. Look at how much flooding occurred in New Jersey yesterday. Look at the flooding. You're going to see more and more of this flooding, where historically a person could live their whole life, the last 100 years, and never have flooding on a block. And now we're seeing that massive flooding is occurring. You're going to see more natural disasters around the United States than ever at any time in our history. So we have to realize now that nature is tipping. Now, you've heard me talk about my documentary and a major book that I'm writing called The 12 Tipping Points. Well, four of those are tipping. We will not be able to stop them. So we are going to have more rain, flooding, fires, drought, hurricanes at higher intensities, and it will only get worse. Most people simply adapt to it. They no longer think it's unusual that you'll have the hottest day in American history in a city, and then the next day, torrential rain of 13 inches in 3 hours. But it actually happened last week. Those kind of events historically would have made people say, what just happened? But what if we took the money that we're now giving to completely corrupt, totally bloated, totally worthless military-industrial complex, the subsidies we give to the insurance industry, the pharmaceutical industry, the energy industry cartels, and instead we started to place in the United States, and you go down to Mississippi, Alabama, and down to Louisiana and Florida and Texas, to the areas most susceptible to hurricanes and flooding, and you build in safe areas shelters, and you build the shelter based upon the projected needs of the population, so people have a place to stay, a safe place to stay that would have security, that would have a complete and full cafeteria, that would have emergency rations stocked. So no matter when it happened, whatever happened, there would be a place for people to go. Because right now, you go down to New Orleans, and I was recently in New Orleans, you don't have anyone doing a thing to help anybody, and everything that is being done and all the money has been spent has been corrupt. You can't show me anything they've done in New Orleans to help the people of New Orleans. And I've been there. I know the people of New Orleans. I know the people of Louisiana and Mississippi and Alabama and Texas. Remember, I lived in Texas for many years in a ranch, used to be Giannotti's Ranch, north of Dallas, and Tioga. So when you get to see what's on the ground, you get to see the reality. What you hear in Washington or over the news is not the reality. And all it takes about 4 or 5 days of any major crisis where people don't have water and don't have food, and then you see society break down. You see social chaos. Never do we plan for this. FEMA is a joke, and it's a pathetic, malignant joke. It doesn't work. It's corrupt. It's incompetent at every level. And what we should have is already in place, complete shelters, complete food, complete water, and at least 10,000 generators, 10,000 per city. Because what happens when you got a hotel and everyone's safe and dry, but they have no water and no food? If you have a generator and you put the generator on the roof, and that's where generators should be, hello, how stupid is the developer that puts a generator at ocean level or below? The generator's going to go off. I have generators. Mine are up on blocks. But then again, I think ahead. And if I never have to use that generator, good. But if I do, and I have, then at least I've got water and I've got food. So you have enough generators. You have enough food. You have enough water. You have water purification systems. You have medical supplies. You have an emergency clinic. Now that way, you have another Katrina. You've got a place for people to be. We should do that in every country that is susceptible to these natural disasters. So we've spent $11 billion in Pakistan. That money, not a penny, has been helping the average person. It goes into their corrupt little stupid military, as if they're going to have another war with India and get their ass kicked again, which will happen. And all the corrupt politicians siphon that off. $11 billion would have built quality housing in safe zones and backup stored food supply for every single person living in Pakistan. Clinics and hospitals. It would have built everything necessary to help earthquake victims and drought victims, but we don't think that way. We don't put people ahead of profits or reason or common sense. But we could. We could do it in the United States. We could do it in California, in the towns I mentioned. But we won't do that because we don't like spending on money on something that hasn't happened. And we come after the point and look around and blame people, and then we act like it won't happen again next year. But it does. Also, why shouldn't we declare certain areas uninhabitable? like in California, how about 60% of the state? Do you look at how many fires they've had recently and how homes being either threatened with being burned to the ground or burning down? Why not simply say the zoning is no longer that you cannot live in a place in the United States where you're at risk of losing your health or your life or your property because of natural disaster? So if you're in a permanent burn area, then the American public should say, you may have the right to build there, but are you going to be responsible when your house burns to the ground or the earthquake takes it? Are you then going to turn around and say, I'm a victim of what? Your own hubris and your own stupidity? We have to, at some point, call it for what it is. We become so detached from cause and effect, so removed from being responsible for the choices we make, that we're just watching Katrina. And it's time we stopped it, planned ahead, and were proactive in a constructive way. Hope that answers that question.
Thank you, Gary.
Let's say hello now to Bob from Saratoga. Hi, Bob.
Hello.
Hi, Bob.
Hi. How are you, Gary?
Good.
Good. I was just wondering if you could provide us with an update on your Healing Springs Ranch project.
Sure. I'm still doing the numbers. The numbers right now don't work based upon the cost of the land, the number of people who could stay there, and how much it would cost me to build an ideal, pure green, and 100% off-the-grid energy place. I'm still looking. I have to have the numbers because right now it would cost me about $300,000 out of my pocket each year as a loss. Can't afford that. So I've got people looking even today as we speak at another location that is a whole lot less expensive but has many of the other amenities. And the longer we go, the more these places are going to come on the market.
Right.
So I'm patient. The program, an artist community, craft centers, homesteading, places for people to live, all that's done. No more of that. I have everything I need to make this work. I just have to have the right piece of property, sustainable, with the criteria I need at a price I can afford. And that's my sticking point at this moment. But we're going full ahead with it.
Yeah. Are you still looking in the Vermont area, or are you spread out more?
No, we're all over. I'm looking in 16 different states.
Oh, okay. All right.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And let's see what Amy from someplace. Where do you live at, Amy?
Hi.
Tacoma Park.
Yeah.
Where's Tacoma Park?
Well, it's in the D.C. area.
Okay. And how can we help you today, Amy?
Have you been Michael Reynolds in the...
I'm sorry, Amy, could you speak up, please?
Yes. Are you familiar with Michael Reynolds and Earthships?
No, I'm sorry, Amy, I don't know who Michael Reynolds is. Do you want to send me some... Send me whatever writings you have on him or videos, and I'll be happy to take a look at it. Okay, I can't answer if I don't know who I'm talking about, all right? It wouldn't be fair to that person. Let's say hello to Jason. And Jason, where are you calling from?
Oh, yeah, Gary. I'm calling from Detroit, Michigan.
All right.
Yeah, my question is, you know, with the problems that happened with the oil spill in the Gulf and in the Atlantic Ocean, what do you think about using the oil-eating microbe to help clean up the problem?
I think that's a very good idea. And I believe that the technology is more than adequate. It's just a matter of producing enough bacteria that would have a have an impact. And right now we don't have enough bacteria to deal with the size of the spill, but it's a good idea. And if I were people down on the shores, I'd be using it in the estuaries first, because that's where your breeding ground for many of your crustaceans and your sea life are, and then work it down the shorelines. So that's what I would do. It's a good idea, Jason. Thank you. And let's say hello to Philip from Colorado. Hi, Philip.
Hey, Gary. Question is on what type of water do you personally drink and why, and cook with, and why have you chosen that versus whatever else is out there?
Well, the water I drink is filtered water. I drink filtered water that I fill into a bottle, and I drink it because, A, it's about 2 cents a gallon, B, because the filtration system I use, which I designed, cleans the water better than any other system I know of. So it's ecologically friendly. I'm not contributing to the mass pollution of plastic. And it's safe. Okay? Thank you.
What type of filtration do you use?
Well, I don't want to do anything that becomes self-promotional, so I can't go into that. I'm sorry. Let's say hello to Nick from Virginia. Hi, Nick.
Good afternoon, Gary. As I always say privately, give them hell, Gary.
I do.
You do. I love it. I have some comments, but let me go to my main question because you don't have time. What percentage of food value is lost when you refrigerate food? And does it lose more and more value the longer it stays in the fridge?
It depends upon the temperature at the refrigerator. If the temperature in the refrigerator is around 38 degrees, you lose very little. But after about a week, you begin to lose anywhere from 15 to 25% of the antioxidant.
Oh, my goodness.
Sally, but you will not lose phytonutrients or minerals and stable vitamins. Those are not lost. Only your more heat-sensitive or oxidative-sensitive antioxidants. But then again, with the amount of good juices you're doing and supplements, you're more than covering for anything that might be lost in the fridge. My general rule of thumb is never keep anything in the freezer for longer than 3 weeks. Never keep anything, unless you're intentionally freezing, like I freeze heirloom seeds. I'm Gary Noll. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening in today, especially those down in Washington, D.C. We have a lot of progressive people listening from governmental agencies, and I thank you for taking your time to listen and share the information. Broadcasting from the one place yet to be compromised in the United States, we're broadcasting the Truth Progressive Radio Network. Have a nice day.
Lots of fancy clothes and rather big fun Cadillac. Not going all the time.
The Gary Noll Show is produced in our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Carol Lee. My friend.